Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that war rocket Ajax? To bring back his body?
Everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I am a little sick, but I'm here anyway.
Buddy.
It's okay.
You're a trooper. You know that?
I wouldn't use the word hero, but I'm just doing my job, just doing what I can.
You know, in Durham, the city where I live, they literally just pulled down that cheap, shitty bronze statue of the Confederate guy.
Yep.
It
crumpled like aluminum foil.
Like fucking tissue paper. I say we put up a statue of Matt Wilson in front of the old courthouse.
He did a podcast when he was a little sick.
When he was a little sick. And he edits out almost every time Harrison meows.
Almost every time. If one of us is talking and he meows under that, there's no fixing it.
Matt, we've got a great show for the people this week here on War Rocket Ajax. We are going to be talking to the people at Devastator Press. That's right, Amanda Meadows and Jeffrey Golden are back. And they are here to talk about the Wet Hot American Summer Fantasy Camp role-playing game that Amanda edited, Jeffrey co-wrote, they both published. It's pretty amazing, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about them. We'll probably also talk about pro wrestling. Heads up, I would say that the majority of the interview is about the RPG, but there is some wrestle talk in there. I know the listeners like to be warned.
Before we get into any of that, Chris, we've got some business to take care of. So let's go ahead and do it, starting with thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. Now, these are the people, if memory serves, I might have this wrong, correct me if I do. These are the people that have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they are giving us as little as a dollar every month to help us keep the show going and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
You need no correction, because that's the truth. Here are the folks who have most recently kicked in a few bucks for us. David Ellis.
Thank you, David.
And Brendan Casey.
Oh, thank you, Brendan.
If you want to do what David and Brendan did and help us out, as Chris said, you can go over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in a little bit of cash. If you do that, you get ad-free episodes of the show. If you donate at a certain level, you get bonus audio that absolutely nobody else gets to listen to. There is a pretty deep, vast library of bonus audio that you can dig into, dating back to when we first got onto Patreon.
Sometimes it's stuff that's cut from the show. Sometimes you just put those headphones in, you hit play, and you're hanging out with your good friends Chris and Matt while they talk about Super Mario.
That's right. We should probably do some bonus audio about Super Mario. Art that we commission that only Patreon supporters get to see. We need to commission some new art. Chris, let's talk about that in the near future. And lots of other cool stuff is on there, so go help us out if you can. Chris, now that we have talked about Patreon, it's time for some comforts and joys.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It tis the season, Matt.
Chris, hit me with a comfort.
Matt, my Christmas tree is up. It's that wonderful, beautiful time of year when my apartment, my living room, is only lit in soft white, red and green, because the Christmas tree is up. And I gotta say, there's some really good new ornaments at Target this year. The Chip and Joanna collection is out. Those two weirdos from Home and Garden Television, they got some good stuff going. Matt, the reason I bring up the Christmas tree, because I think people, people are probably kind of shocked that it took this far into November for the Christmas tree to be up. I do want to point out, it was up before you heard last week's show, and that is a shoot. But you know what's special about my Christmas tree this year?
Please tell me.
Well, there's a little something under it, Matt.
Uh-huh.
There's only one Christmas present under my tree so far this year. It's your Christmas present, Matt.
Oh, that warms the hackles. The cockles of my heart?
Cockles, not the hackles. The hackles are when you're mad.
Yeah, hackles are what get raised. They're not what get warmed.
Although I do think it's very telling that you are so unfamiliar with the idea of your heart being warmed that you're like, oh, that makes me mad. Wait, no, that's not right. This is a different thing.
Yeah, it's like I'm learning to feel for the first time.
It's true.
That is very sweet. I know what you got, and it is awesome, and I'm very excited to get it.
I'm basically holding it for ransom.
No, it's not for ransom. It's a gift. And I'm super excited about it, and I'm very glad that it's under your Christmas tree.
We have not done our annual wrapping paper shopping yet, and I didn't want to use the wrapping paper that we had last year because we got a new tree skirt that's basically the same pattern, and it would weirdly get blended in and camouflaged, which is very weird. But it will be wrapped in proper Christmas present style very soon.
Good to know. I'm very happy to hear that you have the tree up. Because I know for you, Chris, it serves much the same purpose as the seasonal affective disorder lamp does for others. So I hope...
Like, that's not a joke either. That's real.
Yeah. I hope it is bringing light and joy to your life.
It is. It's making things slightly merrier, slightly brighter. Matt, what's bringing you comfort this week?
What's bringing me comfort is that I can make very stupid YouTube videos at my desk without really having to do much other than throw some video clips together in iMovie. And I think I'm going to keep doing it. I have ideas for more. I did an unboxing video for Super Mario Odyssey. I came up with this idea for a very, very dumb joke of an unboxing video. I shot it in probably about 20 minutes, edited it together in about half an hour, and posted it to YouTube really quickly. So, I mean, it's not the most professional thing in the world. It's just on my iMac FaceTime camera, so it doesn't have like great YouTube lighting or anything, but something about doing parodies of like common genres of YouTube video that people can do really easily at home and that they become like famous YouTubers for was something that I suddenly decided I want to do and will do. So little sneak peek of what my next one's going to be. I'm going to try to put together a video that is a little bit of a parody of those like movie commentary videos you see all the time. Not that like they're doing a commentary on the full running time of a movie, but they'll like the video is just clips from a movie with somebody talking over it about like themes or like why the editing is good or bad or, you know, some big high concept about movies. I have a video in my head about that. I also have some other ideas for unboxing videos and, I'll be doing those because it's a fun way to it's a release valve for the stuff that fills up in my brain. And that's a function I use Twitter for a long time. And I'm kind of getting away from using Twitter for that. So
well,
YouTube
it's trash. So,
yeah. So YouTube is my new method of doing that.
Congratulations, Twitter. You're worse than YouTube.
Well, if I start getting enough views on these videos, and I'm assuming that I won't, I will quickly change my tune on YouTube.
I do want to say two things about this YouTube video that you're doing. One, it it has two of my favorite jokes you've ever written. Like I was laughing so hard at one of them that Aiden came into the room and I had to start the video over to show it to her. And I was like, and I texted you, I was like, I'm so fucking mad that you wrote like at this joke you made, because it's very good. The other thing is that I had a weirdly similar unboxing Mario Odyssey experience where I bought the last like physical Switch game I bought was Cave Story. And when you buy the physical version of Cave Story, it has like an instruction manual that's like a classic NES instruction manual. And it's got like a soundtrack on mini disc. I have no idea how to play a mini disc in 2017, but it's in there. So when I opened up Mario Odyssey, I started laughing and Aiden asked me what was going on. And I was like, what do you think is inside this box besides the game? Like when I open up this case, what do you think I see? Cause like, you know, you open up Breath of the Wild, it's got that pretty art. You open up Cave Story, it's got these cool like retro bonuses.
Yeah.
And Aiden was like, what's in there? And I was like, oh, nothing. Just the lyrics to a song about Mario? Which I don't think, like, there's nothing funnier than that to me.
Yeah.
Than that is actually what happens when you open up Super Mario Odyssey.
I actually had no idea what was inside the box. A lot of that was just right off the dome. And the fact that it's really just the game in there is kind of what I wanted. I also had a feeling that it might have one of those warning slips inside. Sometimes games have those inside and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're just printed on the case. So I ended up reading the warning off the case. But I just wanted to do a video about me playing a character where I'm a dumb guy who has never seen a video game before. and so that's what I did. All right, so that's what's bringing me comfort, the ability to make those dumb videos. Chris, let's talk about some joys. What's bringing you joy?
Well, let's talk about the aforementioned Super Mario Odyssey, because I've been playing it pretty hard lately. Do you want the good part or the bad part first?
Let's start with the bad part, and because I want to talk about the good part, because I'm just getting started, really. So let's start with the bad part.
The bad part, and I don't know if this is just a function of like playing it on the small screen, because I don't have my Switch connected to the TV right now. I just play it like in bed or like when I need a break from working for a few minutes. Because for a while I was just playing Stardew Valley, which is like the most soothing, like great game. If you like, it'll just calm you right down. All you gotta do is concentrate on those parsnips, everybody. But it makes me dizzy. It's giving me that like weird dizzy feeling, like when I used to try and play first person shooters. And I'm actually like pretty far into the game, so I don't know what it is about. Like, it kind of started in the New Donk City levels and continued through the snow ones. And I honestly don't know if it's like maybe I'm just getting sick with the change of the seasons. You know, the barometer's dropping. I've had a headache for a couple of days. But I'm really worried that like my experience with Odyssey is going to be like having to step away from it for good bits of time and then dive back in. Again, really weird because Breath of the Wild I didn't have a problem with at all. And Breath of the Wild is, you know, there's about as much running around in that. You just don't, I guess you don't really do the jumps, although you do glide across the world. That's really the only bad part of Odyssey that I have. Otherwise, I think it's a fantastic game.
I've been playing it mostly on the TV, and I have not had that problem. The thing that took some getting used to was the fact that you are encouraged to play the game with the two Joy-Cons loose, not connected to the controller dock thing, but just loose so you can do controller motions. But I feel like you get used to that pretty quickly.
That's actually a pain in the ass too, because they keep wanting you to do that when you're playing. Like, the game can tell when you have the Joy-Cons hooked up to the fucking screen. I can't whip it around. I'm holding the thing right now.
Yeah. So the good is everything else?
Yeah, the good is like I really like the ability to possess people is A, maybe the weirdest thing that's ever happened in a Mario game, which is fucking saying something, but B, like, also really innovative and fun and, like, changes, like, levels, like, changes, like, it literally changes the way you play the game. Because Mario has had more or less the same set of abilities that he has in this game since, like, Mario 64. You know, like, there's not a lot that's different between Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, Mario Galaxy, and now Mario Odyssey. So you know how to get from place to place in these levels. You know, you can navigate it pretty well. So it's almost like when you're just wandering around, if you're just going through the level, it's like almost completely optional to possess enemies. And then when you do it, it's so weird, because when you possess a Cheep Cheep, you behave like a Cheep Cheep. When you possess a block of stone, you can move that around. And sometimes, and this is what makes Mario Odyssey a really great game, you get to possess a Tyrannosaurus Rex and rampage across the countryside, smashing all the enemies in your way. And it is a fucking Jurassic Park-ass photorealistic T-Rex. Which is super weird.
It's great, though. It's fucking great. We should do some bonus content where we get in more into this, because I want to compare, do a thing where we compare this to Super Mario Sunshine and Super Mario Galaxy. Because I have weird mixed feelings about both of those games. But I'll just say, Super Mario Odyssey is the best Mario game since Super Mario 64. And the one that has the best thought out new mechanic since Super Mario 64. Also, it does an amazingly great job of consistently doling out new stuff for you to explore, to obtain, and to seek out. Like, I'm only just getting started. I haven't even collected 100 of the moons yet, but I'm never at a point where I'm like, what do I do now? If anything, I'll be in the middle of trying to do something, and then I'll see something else, and I'll be like, ooh, I want to do that. And I'll completely go off course from what I was doing before and go try to do the other thing. And I love that feeling. I love that feeling of constant exploration and discovery, which is what this game has in spades.
Yeah, it's really super fun.
I'm going to say that's both of our a double rec this week.
Yeah, and if you'd like to learn more about it, there's a really great unboxing video that you can find on Matt Wilson's YouTube channel.
As I understand it, the stuff where you can overtake your enemies and play as them happens on the small rectangle.
Matt, your YouTube channel... I want to say it's Insane Clown Posse Vivo. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to link to it. In the show notes. I mean, if you do go to Insane Clown Posse Vivo, I'm sure you'll have a great time. You'll be against fascism, and that's good. All right, Chris. Those are our comforts and joys. Let's talk about some of the comics of the week.
Let's do it.
Chris, Batman Lost number one is this week's entry in the DC Metal series of numerous comics. We've had all of these individual Dark Universe Bruce Waynes getting their own one-shots. This focuses on our Batman, Earth One Batman, being sent to the dark multiverse and his experience there. What did you think of this book? It was a little bit of an art jam, several different artists and several different writers too. I think there are three credited writers on this.
Yeah, so it's Snyder, Tynion, and Josh Williamson.
It's almost like, you know what it feels like? It's very much like Return of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, it's Doug Monkey, Yannick Paquette, and Jorge Jimenez on pencils, and like it is a jam issue. Like Olivier Coipel does the cover, and there's a special thanks to Greg Capullo, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. So, did you get as much of a sense from this that it's, if not an homage to, maybe the other side of the coin of Return of Bruce Wayne?
Oh, it's absolutely an homage to Return of Bruce Wayne, but like down to like the hyper adapter is fucking in this. Matt. Yeah, and Barbatos shows up,
and Caveman Batman is here.
Caveman Batman is here, but they're deliberately meant to like echo like artistically bits and pieces of that book. The difference is that Return of Bruce Wayne is about Bruce Wayne literally moving forward, like through the time jumps and like moving forward through in space and time. In this, Bruce Wayne keeps falling down. Like all the transitions between scenes involve him falling further and further. And then over the course of the book, you realize that he's falling further into the dark multiverse. You know, that's the dark multiverse is on the other side of the multiverse map.
Yeah.
From Multiversity.
Right.
And so he keeps looking, like the whole thing of the book is he keeps looking for a way up and can't find it. So it plays out. It's like one of the best, like comic books that captures the feel of a bad dream. Because it jumps around in time, you're falling, there's like, you know, you go back and forth to this frame sequence that gets creepier and creepier and creepier, and then it starts recurring. I really like this comic. It is weird, and I love how weird metal in general is, and this story in particular.
Well, so we're going to talk about Mr. Miracle number 4 in a minute, too. I would almost give Batman Lost and Mr. Miracle number 4 the same review, in that they are two comic books that are unafraid to be weird, to dig into deep cut continuity, to do things that, you know, other comics, mainstream comics, might be afraid to do for fear of scaring off readers. Because it's too involved. And yet it does it while presenting a pretty easy to understand story. Like even if you don't get those specific things, the story is pretty easy to understand. And then they both end in almost deflating ways. Mm-hmm. I finished both of these issues feeling, I don't know, a little down, because the end of Batman Lost number 1 is the defeat of Bruce Wayne. He is defeated. He admits defeat to Barbatos. And that's okay, because we know we're only halfway through the metal story, right? But as a single unit of comics, it's a tough pill to swallow to get to the end of the comic book and Bruce Wayne is like, okay, you beat me.
I know it's going to be here, because the one thing that we know about metal as a concept is that it's standing on the shoulders of Grant Morrison, right? Like you don't get this book if you don't go through Batman RIP and Return of Bruce Wayne and all that stuff.
No, you wouldn't have all the weird stuff about the Wayne family.
You literally don't have the stuff.
Yeah.
Arguably my favorite Batman panel of all time. Like looking back on everything from like 2017 might be that panel of the black panel of Batman's eyes opening and the line, but that's the thing about Batman. Like that panel in RIP is so fucking good. And I'm waiting for that moment in metal, 'cause I know it's coming. Because the whole point of metal is that it's a crossover where everybody's Batman. The good guys are Batman. The bad guys are Batman. Like, remember that scene in I think it's in number 2, where like they're chasing the Batman family, and it's just like they're all holodecked up to look like Batman. It's just fucking Batman's everywhere. So you're gonna get that moment, and I kind of can't wait for it. because of books like this. I really like this issue.
Speaking of great moments, great panels, the one where Barbatos comes to Batman's window. There's a lot of stuff about birds and bats at windows in this issue. The thing where Barbatos comes to Bruce Wayne's window and says, "I've been the bat the whole time."
Yes!
Holy fucking shit.
The part where Barbatos says, "Oh yeah, I made you dress up like me, and also, you're actually a shitty detective. I just made you think you were a good one." That's fucking awesome.
It leads to Batman, like, you can believe that Batman would say, "Okay, I give up now." Because Barbatos has him. And so the process of him getting out of it is going to be incredible. It's just weird to end an issue with him feeling like Batman gave up.
The counterpoint to this, in my mind, there's no way this doesn't end with Batman going, "Motherfucker, you're dressed up as me."
Yeah.
I hope he says motherfucker too. I hope that's in there. Hey, just real quick before we move on, comics are full of like stunts to get new readers involved, right? Like the New 52 was one, Rebirth was one.
Yeah.
What do you think if you started reading DC Comics with Rebirth and you have this book and like there's a scene from fucking Dark Knight, Dark City where Thomas Jefferson summons the devil and like the woman who's about to burn to death like gets off the altar and is like, "Hey, what's up? They're gonna sacrifice my life to bring Barbatos into the world. I've seen it like I see you." Like, what do you think is happening if you only have like the last couple of years of comics to go by?
And like all the stuff where she's like, "But look, I'm cool with it." Like the fact that she's so nonchalant about it is what's the wildest thing about that scene to me.
Yeah. We, like, this metal as a whole is for us. Like, I think it's great. I just don't know. I have no idea if people would like it or not like it or how they would even react to it if they don't have, like, 35 years of context.
Well, I mean, the stuff where Alan Wayne is running through the streets of Gotham City in the 19th century and saying, like, "Look, my name is actually Bruce, and I'm not from this time." Like, you have to have at least some grounding in the Grant Morrison Batman stuff for this. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine how lost you would be. You would be Batman lost.
So true.
Okay, so let's talk about Mr. Miracle number 4. I talked about it also similarly being deflating at the end, and I'm just going to get to what the end of this book is, so then we can talk about the stuff that all leads up to it. This issue is all basically a trial of Mr. Miracle, and he is sentenced to be executed at the end.
Yep, in 3 days.
Yep.
In 3 days, because Orion knows that he cannot hold him because he is the world's greatest, the universe's greatest escape artist. So he's just going to execute him in 3 days. That said, this issue is really, really good. And I told you this because I didn't want to forget to talk about it on the show. The trial of Mr. Miracle is fucking Jack Kirby versus Steve Ditko. Because Orion appoints himself as judge, because he is Highfather now, and his method of the trial is to give Mr. Miracle a series of statements and ask him if they are true or false. Nothing in between. No relativism, no sometimes that's true, no I don't know. He literally says, I don't care what you know, I want to know what you believe. It's like fucking Mr. Miracle versus Mr. A, and I love it. I love it so much.
I can't imagine that I would have thought. I mean, there are other comics that have done this, but you know, we talk about comics being too talky or having insufficient action to be a comic book. Mm-hmm. This issue is largely the interrogation of a witness, the interrogation of Mr. Miracle by Orion. And it's riveting. The tension in that whole sequence is palpable. Because What Mr. Miracle has been accused of is being an agent of Darkseid. And also, tacitly, Mr. Miracle is accusing Orion of being an agent of Darkseid, or working for Darkseid, or somehow being infected by the anti-life equation. His theory is basically everything has been infected by the anti-life equation. Mm-hmm. So it's this the difference between what's being said and what is known. Or, like, Mr. Miracle is admitting things that seem to be incriminating. To him, they're true. And they're not incriminating to him. So it's like the two different viewpoints that this is coming from. Like, in Mr. Miracle's mind, his responses don't make him seem guilty. And to Orion, it makes him seem completely and entirely guilty of being an agent of Darkseid. The way that the two sides are working against each other, and then you've got Light Ray and Big Barda, and somebody else is there in the audience too.
Oh, he's one of the security guys.
Okay. They're there observing too, and, you know, obviously Barda is on Scott's side, but it's just – and she's so fucking mad at Light Ray throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
And the way they're drawn, like, not only is she towering above Light Ray, but, like, Light Ray is, like, slouched down because she has previously beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, she did that. Yeah, she does that right at the beginning. But then there's the humor that's in this issue, too.
Yes.
There's an extended joke about getting a veggie plate for the trial that's extremely funny.
Yes.
And, like, moments of extreme tension are broken by somebody picking up a little slice of – a little baby carrot and eating a baby carrot. In some ways, it very much reminded me of the Matt Fraction, David Aja, Hawkeye series. This issue reminded me of Hawkeye a lot.
Yeah. There are three 9-panel grid pages, so 27 panels in a row, alternating between Orion and Mr. Miracle, that I don't think they're the same panel, and there's certainly, like, a little bit of variation, and there's certainly, like, you know, every now and then there'll be one of those weird, like, VHS effects in it. You know, like you said, 27 straight panels of what are basically the same two panels repeated, and it could not be more tense. And I love – like, I love the way it plays out, because the subtle portrayal of Orion as a guy who's so confident that he is not only working backwards from a conclusion, but that he's forcing Mr. Miracle to answer in binary, yes or no, but the questions he's asking are about possibilities. He asks him could questions. Like, so you could be an agent of Darkseid, true or false? You know, so like, it's so well crafted. Like, it's fucking great, man. Like, I love this comic book. It's getting into some, like, really intense and, like, personal and psychological stuff that I, you know, honestly, like, I really relate to in this. And especially the part, not to spoil the whole issue, but there's a part in this where after pages and pages and pages of this true or false questioning, Scott just starts screaming. And he just, like, screams for a page. And again, a 9-panel grid page. And it's like, yep, same, buddy. Same. Like, I get it. It's very, very good.
But it's what's makes it even all the weirder is that, you know, we know all the big stuff is going on. We know this huge war is going on New Genesis and Apocalypse. But this trial is happening in an apartment. And Scott Free is wearing a Green Lantern t-shirt when Light Ray shows up and tells him that he's going to be put on trial. And holding a cup of coffee, and he's got stubble all over his face. And that's what made me think of Clint Barton so vividly.
Yeah.
In that moment. And the stuff about, you know, the mundane stuff, like the stuff about the veggie plate. Like, bringing
the Amazon delivery.
Yeah, the Amazon delivery. Like, bringing the mundane into it, one, reminds me of Hawkeye, and two, I think is what makes the book transcendent. It's like, if this stuff was happening on New Genesis, it would still be good, but it wouldn't have the same impact. There's something brilliant about setting it where it's set.
Yeah. I love this comic book. And I say this as someone who's been like, I've been a King fan for a while. This is the best thing he's done. Like, if it maintains this level for the entirety of it, and I have no reason to believe it's not, because Omega Men ended strong, Grayson ended strong, Batman's been consistent throughout, Vision, I haven't read, but I've heard it's pretty strong all the way through, then this is going to be the best thing he's ever done. Sheriff of Babylon is really strong, so... This is the best shit in comics right now. And again, it absolutely should not be your first comic.
No, because again, like there's some stuff you need to know going in, but it is extremely good. One last comic that I want to talk about. We talked about the first issue back when Katie Schenkel came on to co-host with me. It's Eugenic, issue number 2. This is by James Tynion IV and Eric Donovan. We talked about how horrific the first issue was. The second issue is less horrific, but it takes a really odd turn. The first issue made it clear that there was going to be a time jump between issues 1 and 2. And what happens in that time jump is... not everything that the scientist who essentially rewrote the genes, the genetic code of humanity, back in issue 1, thought would happen, has happened. He thought that all of humanity was going to become these, like, kind of purple-skinned creatures that would have no genetic differences, so there couldn't be any discrimination. There was a group of humans that turned out to be immune to it. So there's still regular humans along with what they started calling the Newmans, which are the new humans, these genetically changed human beings. And they've been, you know, put in the original humans who are left have kind of been set aside into shanty towns, basically, these hovels of cities, to just kind of live out their lives. There's a resistance that kind of comes up, and this issue is all about that. It's less of a horror story than the first issue, but just as much of like kind of a Black Mirror plot idea as the first. And the events of this one make me all the more curious to see how Tynion and Donovan finish things up, because we get promised another time jump in issue 3. I'm not as intrigued by what happens in issue 2 as I was what happened in issue 1, because issue 1 introduced so many big ideas. But I also like the idea of bringing a little chaos into this. And so issue 3 is certainly going to deal with the chaos. And I'm digging the big high concepts of this so far. So if that sounds like your deal, then you should check it out too. All right, Chris, that does it for our comics reviews. Let's get into our interview segment with Jeffrey Golden and Amanda Meadows.
Joining us for the program this week, we're very excited to welcome back, I'm going to say, two of our favorite people in and around the world of comics and humor and publishing and all that good stuff. We have Jeffrey Golden and Amanda Meadows of The Devastator here to talk to us about the new Wet Hot American Summer RPG, which is real.
It's real!
And we're real. And we're real. And we're real. We're real excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're on that list, that we're so high on your list here.
Positively chuffed.
Yes.
For you two are our favorite people in the podcasting world.
I'm Chufflepuff, my favorite Pokemon over here.
Chufflepuff!
Alright, we're sliding lower on the list.
I like this because I can say like three words and then I just like go get a nice beverage in the room and come back and there's a bit going.
The opposite of a bear corvette.
You're like, this is gonna go on for a couple minutes. Let me grab a drink.
I was gonna try to see how long we could go without bringing up pro wrestling, but now that it's happened, I have a question.
We're at a minute 20. Minute 20 right now.
This is something that Matt and I were talking about before the show, and you, as two people who know us, who you've been on the show before, we have dined together. I dare say we're friends.
Absolutely.
Between me and Matt Wilson, who's the Ric Flair and who's the Dusty Rhodes?
Oh, shit. Oh,
that's tough.
Ooh. Oh, boy. All right. Look. I have an idea.
Okay.
All right. So I start to I get up. I clear my throat. I'm about to reveal who I believe is the Ric Flair and who is the Dusty Rhodes. But before I do, let me just say...
What?
Thank you to everyone in the audience.
What?
All right, okay. I get the message.
What?
My picks are... Bam! Oh, no, Amanda hit me with a steel chair. Oh, no, this... It looks like this pronouncement is ending in a dusty finish. We'll never know the answer now. Just like we'll never really know who the Raw general manager is. Oh, no. We did find out.
Yeah, we found out like 8 years ago.
It was Hornswoggle or something, right? Anyway, all right, let's be serious.
Yeah, let's be real.
Let's treat this with the dignity it deserves here.
Oh, shit.
I'm gonna say
both all American.
Yeah,
I would like to point out that I do not look like the athlete of the day is supposed to look.
Fair.
I'm trying to remember which of you is more stylish. That fashion is a big part of it both of their gimmicks. I would say the robes and the polka dots and everything.
Well, also consider which one of us would you see wearing a denim vest, jean shorts, and cowboy boots?
That's also a good question.
I honestly can't picture either of us in that outfit. That's very difficult.
To do commentary at a biker rally.
You're both Damien Sandow. The end.
I'll take it.
Kind words.
Yeah. I'm thinking pre-stunt double Damien Sandow.
Pre-Mizdow.
So this is the two very highly intelligent
well-groomed
people. Well-groomed.
Erudite.
Erudite people, definitely.
Well, you're welcome.
Perfect.
So let's dive back into this. We'll see how far we can stay away from the sport of kings.
Great.
Red Hot American Summer Fantasy Camp.
Yes.
Is a tabletop RPG based on the film and two Netflix series franchise Wet Hot American Summer.
Point of order, we must make the legal distinction as the publishers of this game that it is solely based on the film, but we... nor the publishers, nor the license holders can control what you, the fans, decide to do with the manual and the module in this book.
You can create your own camp and scenarios. But I was going to add just that it is, and I guess this is to that point, it is the official Wet Hot American Summer tabletop role-playing game.
It is the only and legitimate.
It is. Yeah. We have a foreword by David Wayne, who has approved personally...
Read and approved
the game, which is amazing. Yeah. We have interviews with Michael Ian Black, Joe Latruglio, and Marguerite Moreau in the book.
Insane, yeah.
And we've had, there's cast members have played it, and it's just crazy. It's a crazy thing. Tweet about it and stuff. It's a crazy thing.
Yeah, it's not like it's not a parody or a zine.
No,
it's a legit Wet Hot. It's I want to say, I think it's the only licensed Wet Hot American Summer project I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's very likely.
Yeah.
There are official t-shirts. You used to be
Urban Outfitters.
Yeah, I was going to say Hot Topic. I believe you can still get them at Urban. That makes sense.
Yeah.
There's a vinyl album. There's a vinyl LP that's definitely worth picking up as well.
Yeah, we own it. It's got all the songs. It's great.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's just what you wanted, and I like the way it's packaged, too. It looks like the bulletin board from
the end credits.
From the end credits, which is really cool.
Yeah, and this is like, again, this is not like a small thing. Like, our listeners can go onto Amazon and order this right now. It's like the third thing that comes up if you search for Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, that's great. I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
Only three in stock left. Order soon.
Yeah, order soon. They did put in another order with our distributor, so there is more on the way. If you order one tonight and you're worried that you're not going to get it in 2 days, you might still get it within three or four. So,
but if you want it fast, you can also get it direct from our website to devastatorpress.com, and you can pick that up there. But yeah, it's 118 pages. It was designed by a graphic designer from the New Yorker. All of us, everybody who worked on it is a huge, including myself, a huge Wet Hot American Summer fan.
Jeffrey and Lee, you know, designed the game together and wrote the game. And it's just, it was just a massive undertaking. It was like 9-10 months of dense labor, getting the engine right, testing, play testing, and then rewriting and getting all the character stuff in.
A lot of things go into making a game that don't go in, like, I mean, we're a publisher, so we're very used to doing these projects, you know, making things for print. But a game is very unique in that, you know, when you write it, basically the way we did it was we wrote a skeleton version of the rules that we play tested, and then to look for problems and also things that we could add that would make it better. And then we played it over and over again with different groups until we finally had a version of those rules that made sense.
And then we were able to rewrite it.
And we built on it.
To do the thing where that makes it so fun, where, you know, like a lot of games, the manual is really dry and boring because they're really focused on making it clear to understand. So it's just like super boring.
Well, fuck clarity.
Fuck clarity. There's scribbles and doodles and characters crossing out each other's rules because they think they're dumb. It's just like a fun, like, collaborative effort among the indoor kids to write the manual, and you get to, like, enjoy more Wet Hot American Summer hashtag content.
Right.
Basically, while reading it.
The idea was, if you had never read a role-playing game before, we're not interested in it as a role-playing game, you could just read it as a Wet Hot American Summer book and you would enjoy it. And that's what I think we managed to do, which is pretty cool. So
you two are the publishers. Amanda, you edited the book.
Yes.
And Jeffrey, you were one of the designers along with Lee Keeler.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you have any, like, game design experience? Because this is not, like, we've talked about comedy, we've talked about comics, we've talked about wrestling extensively. But I don't know that we've ever talked about RPGs, which is, you know, obviously something that we're fans of here on the show.
Absolutely. Well, Jeffrey, you've got a lot of RPG experience. Like, you used to write video games.
I think the first video games I wrote were back in 2006. I was working for a company called Liquid Generation, which made awful Flash games.
It was like a Icebox or something, but worse. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, did you do the one where you have to perform dentistry on Elsa from Frozen?
That's super me. It was years after I quit, but I decided to come back just for that one game because it was like I heard about that project and it's like I got to get in there. And she's pregnant too, which is really fun.
Yeah, it's a legacy builder.
Yeah. She's pregnant. You have to do dentistry on her. And it's also a dating sim.
Takes a lot of care.
Yeah, that's true. Checks all the boxes.
But then you also worked at Meteor Games, which made Neopets, and they were working on like a massive MMORPG that didn't come out, but that's really like where you super cut your teeth.
Yeah.
And you were the lead writer on it.
I was. And that was an interesting, crazy experience. I mean, I had a team of six people working under me building a role-playing game, and I had written a lot. I had been, done a lot of comedy writing and even some adventure writing, but I'd never written an RPG before.
I learned a lot
yeah. Through that experience. But the probably the most relevant things to making Wet Hot was one, I did the official mobile game for Now You See Me. Do you remember the magician movie?
Okay, that's in your bio at the end of the book, and I was 100% sure that was a joke.
No, real thing. When you put my career on paper, it does seem like a joke. I admit that 100%, but it's true.
So is this a legit bio? Because I thought this was all jokes up to the point. Where you start like mentioning books that I own.
Credit by credit.
What am I listing here in my thing?
You also mentioned writing comics for Disney, which you did. You wrote for Disney Princess.
So the official Now You See Me mobile game, you can get that on Facebook if you look up Now You See Me game. And it's a role-playing game. It's like a role-playing choose your own adventure kind of experience
through Facebook chat.
So I designed it with Lynn Donahue, who's another Devastator writer.
Yeah,
and
she wrote the Cats You Never Learn About History class scene.
Which is really fun. Can I
interject with a question real quick?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Having not seen Now You See Me or Now You See Me Too, are they like real wizards?
No,
they're just magicians. It's all the illusions, Michael.
But there are real wizards in that world?
No. No, there's not.
I don't think
magic
so.
Is not real. Magic is it's so good that you think it could be, but it's not.
But that's why they're so secretive about it, because all of these illusions are so powerful.
They're all Batman, but magicians.
Yeah,
is how
it's
you would
a
describe
team of
it.
Batman.
A team of Batman, right. They're, they can do anything that a magician can do, but better.
Elaborate smoke bombs.
Elaborate smoke bombs and a lot of crazy garbage. I highly recommend
watching the first Now You See
first
Me.
One
I'm
is
just
great.
Gonna say it.
It's, first one is great.
It's super funny. It's very much like a capital M movie.
Yes.
It feels like something out of the 90s. Like, it should have come out in 1997.
It's screenplay the movie.
Yeah.
It's like, you can see, you know how in the Oscars, when you have, like, awards for best screenplay, and they'll put, like, captions from the screenplay, like, over the movie?
And then you're like, okay,
somebody
this
wrote
this.
This
doesn't seem so good anymore.
Right. It's like watching Now You See Me for me was basically just that, but for the entire experience.
Right.
I was just imagining, like, exterior, magician's loft day. Jesse Eisenberg bursts through the door with magic. Close in on Woody Harrelson. What are you doing here, magic boy? That kind of a movie.
The top of his bald head glistens.
Right.
So you did design the Now You See Me mobile game.
Yes.
That's right. And then the other game that was perhaps the most important in terms of doing this was Wizards of Cockblock Forest.
Which is a real game.
It is a real game, my friend. You can get it at devastatedpress.com/cockblock. Everybody plays as a wizard, and you have to cockblock each other with magic spells.
Yeah, it's a very sex-positive role-playing game, because it's all about shutting down creepazoids.
Right, don't act like creep. Women players are much better,
so much
on
better.
Average, than male players are at this game.
Yeah.
At this point, I've played it so many times, I could make that decision.
Oh,
it's very
hands
the
down.
Pattern is very clear here. But it's it was fun. It's the official late night role playing game of San Diego Comic Con.
But that is
also thought that was a joke. Also, yeah. Definitely thought that was a joke.
It's the only Don't time they ever did that. We had that year of Comic Con. The person who was in charge of running the gaming schedule for Comic-Con was like, we are technically not allowed to do this game, but I love it so much that we're going to do it at midnight. At the hotel where they can't shut us down. So they called it the official late night RPG in the program that year. I think it was 2012. It was a weird distinction, but we were like, we have to remember this.
Yeah, we'll take it. So I've actually had I've had a lot of experience writing for a lot of different mediums, but one of my favorites is role playing. Oh, and I have a video game I contributed to that's out now for PlayStation 4 called Fallen Legion. It's a really cool game. Actually, Xavier Woods.
He reviewed it on Up, Up, Down, Down.
Yeah, it was like a highlight of my year. It's like, oh my God, Xavier Woods is reviewing a game
he liked it.
And he liked it. That was fun. So, see, we brought it back to wrestling.
We did.
I knew we would.
Yeah, how much?
Eventually.
Did not take long.
Did not take long.
16 minutes.
It took 12 minutes. The last time we talked about it was 4 minutes and 15 seconds.
Good.
Yeah. All right, great.
I love it.
We're moving at a good clip here.
So you do have, like, game design experience, but not tabletop game experience, is what I'm hearing.
Well, Wizards was a tabletop
game. That was a
pen. Yes, I guess that is true. But
yeah.
is it, again, I've read it because that was it's a Devastator book, and I've got, I think, most, if not all, of the Devastator Press stuff. But I didn't realize it was actually playable, which I hope is not insulting.
No.
A lot of people ask because it's just fun to read. So you wouldn't think that you could actually play it. But yeah, we game tested it thoroughly before releasing it, and we've played it many times at conventions. It's kind of a favorite. People still ask us about it and ask about expansions, but we've been working on this, so.
Right. This is sort of the unofficial sequel to Wizards of Conquest.
Oh, yeah, because, this game is also hella about getting laid.
Right, this is true. There's a lot of the same similar thematic elements run through both.
I like
One of the things that I really loved about the system from just reading the guidebook is that instead of having, the traditional stats that you would see in an RPG, you have traits that are in a system. You're either a dummy or a smarty, a jerk or a sweetheart, a weakling or buff, a bummer or a charmer, bad weird or good weird.
Right.
And you pick one of those pairs, and that's all the stats you have.
Yes.
That is great.
It easy, but also the type of movie that that Wet Hot was making fun of was super simplistic, so it made sense to condense it all into a hilarious series of binaries.
This is true. There's a couple reasons for it. And by the way, people can, of course, customize their character with special moves and stuff. But, and then they add bios and stuff. But yes, the main thing was to try to get rid of as much math as possible. I was trying to imagine a player who was not as familiar with RPGs, who didn't want to be calculating, tons of buffs and things like that, who wanted to focus more on the role-playing aspect and on, to me, that's the most fun part of a role-playing game is role-playing, is playing, pretending to be someone else and making decisions.
Right.
And I think especially for the type of comic archetypes that these characters are, that this character can be boiled down to a series of really broad and silly traits, encourages players to not think in terms of shades of gray when they're play acting as their characters and think more in terms of their weakness. People love to play as their weaknesses in this game.
Yeah.
So we find this over and over again. It's really fun. They're lame traits. So if somebody, creates a character who's a jerk, even if that character is also a charmer and buff. Like, they're very much more likely to play the character as a jerk.
Right.
Which is funny. Negative traits are funny, and so that makes it a really enjoyable experience. Yeah. As opposed to saying to somebody, well, you have, you know, your smartness is a 7, and your strength is a 3, and it's like, you get a sense. I mean, you get a cool sense of what you're supposed to be, but if you just say, you are dumb, then right. It's like, then you get a character who's a broad archetype, which is what we're looking for here.
Yeah.
What's the distinction between good weird and bad weird?
Good weird, okay, bad weird is a character who creeps you out. So a good example of a bad weird character who is different, but in a way that
makes you uncomfortable.
So Steve in Wet Hot, who the robot kid, he's a very good example, I would say, of bad weird. There's something about him that like repels you and kind of puts you off. And it isn't until the end when he reveals his power that people like, you know, come around to him. But like he puts people off. And then good weird is somebody who they're different, but in an entertaining way. So it's somebody who, you know, oh, I built a water slide for everybody last night instead of sleeping. And it's like, oh, that's a crazy
thing to
do. Well,
that's weird for you to do, but yeah, I'm going to go on this water slide.
Yeah, I'm no dummy. I'm going to enjoy this slide. So that's kind of that's the distinction.
Quirk versus creep.
Yeah, quirk versus creep. Ooh, I like that. There you go.
I did it.
There you go.
You know, those kinds of distinctions, like there's a lot of choice that's given to players who want to build their own characters in here.
Yes.
But the whole back of the book is character sheets for existing characters, because I think you guys rightly assumed that people were going to come into this game saying, I got to play as Gene.
Right.
I got to be Gene. I got to be Beth. Got to be Elizabeth Banks, like whoever their favorite character from the movie.
Everybody wants to play Andy. That's just.
Everybody.
I assume you could have stopped with Andy.
Yeah, Andy is the number one choice, and the number two choice is the can of vegetables.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of people want to play as can of mixed vegetables.
See, I went to Gene right away because he's who I'd want to be. But.
Great character, great choice.
It seems like there's. You did a lot to try to strike a balance between serving the two masters of role-playing game fans who
right.
want to be able to customize and do their own thing and go right up to breaking the system when they play, right?
Yeah, right, and real hard.
And then fans of Wet Hot American Summer who just want to spend some more time with their favorite characters in this setting that they like and do funny and fun stuff. So, you know, how did you arrive at striking that balance?
Well, that's...
Thank you for noticing.
Yeah.
It took a lot of thought to try to get it to that point. On Jeffrey's part, anyway. I helped, but mostly
you did.
Jeffrey.
Well, no, you did, and it is well said. And yeah, that was the goal. That was pretty much the goal of the game from the beginning.
Right.
Is that we wanted it to be, because that's what I, as a player, that's what I want.
I want games to be inclusive.
Right.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, there's games that sound cool, but the rules seem really like a huge barrier to entry for me, because I'm a very casual gamer.
Right.
And I'm more of a comedy fan than a gamer, too. So it's like, you know, editing the book, I kept kind of looking back to myself and asking myself at different points in the book, like, did I get this? Would I be persuaded at this point to try making my own character instead of playing it safe with a regular character and stuff like that? So, yeah.
I think that also when doing I've had a lot of experience now with licensed project. And one thing that I think is really important is with one of these is that you need to understand what the appeal is of the property that you are licensing, right? Like, if you don't understand, if we made a Wet Hot American Summer game, I mean, I guess there's, like, a funny, like, art experiment in, like, making a Wet Hot American Summer game that's, like, rules dense, lore dense, it's, like, impossible to get through, it's, like, it's unreadable, you know? Right. There's, like, a funny, like, item that you might yeah. want to own, but it's not, but like, even, a great game.
But we even speak to that,
yeah, like, that's true. That's
possible alternate universe of the game through Keith.
Right.
Because Keith keeps trying to inject insane lore into the game through the the gonad warlings.
Right.
And, like, keeps trying to, like, infuse it with more weird stuff, and Cure Girl is like, no gonad warlings, it. No. Everyone just wants to hang out with the camp kids.
Right. And that's the thing. Everybody just wants to hang out, you know. I think that's what's great about the film is that you're watching a group of comedians let loose and hang out. And these were people who, you know, were not famous at the time, who were really just, like, let loose and allowed to, like, play, like, really broad, dumb, and, like, hilarious characters. And wanted to make sure that that was at the forefront. That
it's about playing.
To give
yeah.
players... put them in a world where they felt like it was really was Wet Hot, you know, not in a fantasy. Because that was another thought too early on, was like, well, it could be like a fantasy game that, you know, incorporated the Wet Hot characters as like a D&D parody, like Wizards is. But it really, at the end, we decided early on, no, that's not what people want. Like, this should be a game where you can role play in the world of Camp Firewood.
Exactly.
As a camper.
That's also just like what I, you know, at least from my understanding of the RPG world seems to be missing are these like super like fun, low key games that are based on like real life experiences.
Right.
Like I would play an RPG where you're just like working at a restaurant. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, there are certainly like indie games. I think indie video games, I think, are catching up to that thinking.
Exactly.
Or caught up to that thinking. But yeah, I just think it's a variety is really good when it comes to role playing games because people want to role play as different things.
Yeah.
And this is the game that lets you role play as a camper or counselor in a 1980s summer camp. You know, a niche to be sure, but it's a niche worth filling, we thought.
Exactly.
I do love that this game includes a playable module based on the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
What you want is to play Wet Hot American Summer, the movie, as a role-playing game. That is exactly what is provided. And I have to know, like, what's that process like? Like, how many times did you have to sit down and watch the movie and chart out character paths and be like, okay, if this is going to be an adventure, this is what it needs to be.
I watched the movie at least 10 times in the past year, either fast yeah. play or watching it in its entirety, as well as watching a lot of other materials that it's, you know, other 80s camp movies and things to kind of get inspiration for different things.
Yes.
So to answer your question, the reason we structured the book the way we did was because there are people who definitely want to play the scenarios that are presented in the film. And we broke them down into three, which was, you know, getting laid. There's a bonfire where everybody's going to boink, bonfire boinking.
Right.
It's like a romance plot. There's another storyline where you can save the camp from some kind of major crazy disaster.
Right.
And there's a third one that's based on the talent show where you are prepping for this important talent show. And we sort of up the stakes on it where there's like a Broadway or Hollywood figure who's going to come to see you, and this could make or break this camp performance at a summer camp may make or break your career. as it does in real life. But part of the reason we did it this way was because we wanted to show people what a fully built camp would look like so that they could build camps of their own.
Right.
I think that's that to me is, I think, the more exciting thing, although I love that we were able to gamify some of the elements of the film. There's a sequence where you steal a water ski, you know, from Andy. There's a game, you know, there's a mini game based around arts and crafts where you have to comfort Gail in her time of need. What I'm really curious to see is, and we saw a lot of it in the game testing, is how people, the kinds of camps people will create on their own.
Right.
Because people are fairly, the players are really imaginative, and stretching the Wet Hot sensibility to other genres is what Wet Hot does. I mean, that's what Wet Hot does,
right.
You know. That's, in the new iteration, they take on, you know, 90s dramas and thrillers and all kinds of other genres. So seeing other people, allowing gamers to do that, I think was pretty cool. So that was the thinking, was to separate the rules from the world of Wet Hot so that you could play in the world, you could play in Camp Firewood, but you could also take it to a whole other place. You could make a fat camp or a space camp or some other crazy camp.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see, we've hit the RPG, we've talked about wrestling, we've talked about comedy. I think we've gotten it all. We've talked about Now You See Me,
which
is very important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think now it is the time of the show where we kick it over to our listeners to see what they have to ask you.
Excellent.
Ooh, all right.
Matt, if the people want to get on these conversations that we have every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how exactly can they do that?
Well, Chris, what they need to do, usually in this part of the show, I tell the listener what they should do. This time I'm going to tell them what they shouldn't do.
Oh.
And that is, do not steal my idea, copyright me, 2017, for my new film, Screenplay the Movie.
I hate to break it to you, but there's already adaptation. Just basically that.
The first line of dialogue is narration from Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman is going to be the directions of the screenplay, and it's just going to be Morgan Freeman saying, "Fade in."
I thought you were saying the first line of the movie was a character saying the words narration by Morgan Freeman.
Well,
also good.
After Morgan Freeman says "fade in," then somebody says narration by Morgan Freeman.
Okay, right, good.
So just don't steal that. That's mine. I have that.
It's yours.
But
yeah, make sure you get those WGA creds.
The certificate.
I'm going to mail the idea to myself, and then you can't steal it.
I love that. That's like my favorite
thing.
Because
then it would be mail fraud. Good idea, federal offense.
I love it.
Do go to twitter.com and sign up for an account. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And either Chris or I will put out the call for questions, and you can ask questions just like these that you're about to hear for Amanda and Jeffrey. And we're going to start with this question from Charlotte of Oz, our good friend, noted shitster. Charlotte asks, will the Wet Hot American Summer role-playing experience be considered non-canon if I introduce a deck of many things?
What is the deck of many things?
The deck of many things is a wondrous item that a player can choose to draw up to 3 cards from, and they can get good things or bad things, and you can use a regular playing card deck, a tarot card deck, or a specialty deck of many things deck to draw from it. It can do things like imprison your soul in a gem, suddenly create a 5th level fighter who serves you, give you, like, you have to fight the next monster you see one-on-one to instantly gain a level. It's got all kinds of stuff going on.
Well, this is the magic of RPGs. So technically, legally speaking, the book will always be canon. Whatever you, the player, decide to do, i.e. bringing in a badass deck of many things and trapping souls and gems, which I think
sounds great,
is highly recommended for me. Yeah. I've never done it, but I highly recommend it.
Okay, but for Wet Hot, it's a gem, G-Y-M.
Your soul is trapped in Jim. It must climb the rope.
Jim said so.
Over and over for all eternity. That's fair.
Yeah, I like that. And by the way, there's nothing. We have not been told that our game is not canon.
No.
And the game is written, the fiction of the game is written in such a way that it doesn't interfere with anything that happens in the films or the TV shows. So
it tells you what happens in a gap of time between when the movie ends and the other things happen.
Right.
So,
and since we're the only fiction, since we're the only non-movies TV fiction of Wet Hot at this time, I'm going to go ahead and say it's canon,
yeah.
And I'm going to agree with Amanda and say whatever you do is canon.
Whatever you do is canon, because that's the magic of role-playing games. And I'm sure David Wayne would agree. Just ask him on Twitter, too.
Yeah.
Okay, don't do that. He might get mad.
Here's a question from Doubting_Tom on Twitter. Tom asks, what rules exist to prevent fist fights over who gets to be the can of mixed vegetables?
There are no rules to that effect.
You could roll the dice of fate if you'd like.
Well, I mean, let's remember that question, it sounds like that is a pre-game question. That's
right.
You're not in the game when you're playing.
No, this is before you start.
This is kind of a before you start or as you're starting sort of thing. So, no rules there. Good luck. It's a lawless hellscape.
Yeah, maybe just pick friends who won't be direct competitors to you.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Fill the room with some Katies and Andys so you can have your
your niche,
your can of vegetables niche firmly secured.
This is true. Also, I mean, of course, there's only one can of vegetables. But you can create a character, and there's nothing stopping you from creating
another brand,
another object.
Not Dozinski's, but maybe...
maybe it's a pasta sauce that comes
out.
Or maybe you play as the fridge that came to life because Gene humped it.
Yeah.
You're playing as this fridge character, kind of a create sort of a Beauty and the Beast sort of vibe with the game.
I think that's a really smart move. It'll piss everyone off because they'll be like, I didn't think of that. Now I'm jealous.
Yeah.
There's no losing here.
Yeah.
Here's a question from Not Mandalorian. This is kind of...
I can't tell if we're answering these questions well or not.
No, I can't either.
But we'll just keep going.
They want to know, is there a perk for some sort, allowing you to make a Faustian bargain for eternal youth like Paul Rudd, or will that be in a later expansion?
The Devil Camp is definitely... Devil's Camp. Is definitely an upcoming expansion.
Yeah, but you can build that camp yourself.
I love Faustian bargains.
Yes,
and I think that would be a great mechanic for a game. It's certainly the fantasy camp supports Faustian bargains as a mechanic.
Always,
yeah.
And it just kind of reminded me that I love the movie Death Becomes Her. And I would play the RPG of Death Becomes Her.
Oh,
so
great.
If anyone out there
owns the merchandising rights.
Or just another fan who would be down to make it, I'd help.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. All right, it's a fan project. Do it. Let's do it. I'm going to do the one Bedeviled, starring Elizabeth Hurley?
Bedazzled?
Bewitched?
Bedeviled? No.
It's not called Bedeviled?
Bejeweled.
What is that movie?
It's not called... It's called Bedazzled.
Oh, it is Bedazzled.
Yay,
okay,
we did it.
Good. Great. That
no name sounds right, because it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a question from Just Plain Tweets on Twitter. Katie Schenkel, friend of the show. Now, part of her question is about whether the prequels / sequels are canon, and you've already given the legal answer to that.
We don't have... the rights to the Netflix shows.
Because they are, Netflix is on lock. They are not, that's not like on the table for anybody.
Right.
So our book is based on the movie.
Solely on the movie.
But we give you the keys to make your own camp, and you can also just take all of this and do Netflix stuff if you'd like as a fan.
You can take you can the, do camp, whatever. Well, the Camp Firewood, the Camp Firewood adventure module, definitely with some light tweaking you could do easily do the prequels or sequels. I don't even know that you need to do any tweaking.
Not really. You just need a camp director who knows what happened and can plan your day accordingly.
Right.
So that I think that addresses the second part of Katie's question, which asks if you can play as Evil Reagan.
Oh yeah. I highly recommend.
It's not a pre-made character, but it's a character you should make.
And if anyone cosplays as Evil Reagan at the table, please Instagram it.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Tag us at Devastator Press.
And of course, as we alluded to before, character creation is very simple. I mean, you can create a character in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's made it very easy.
So it's not, when we say like you can make your own Evil Reagan, that's not like it's like, oh, that's gonna be like a whole day of like researching like spells and shit. It's like, no, you could do it in 5 to 10 minutes easily.
Yeah, exactly.
So you could have a table of Evil Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and the nuclear missile that's underneath the camp.
Yeah,
totally.
And someone plays as the spirit totem. Yes.
Yay. Absolutely.
Love that game. Love that game.
Here's a question from the Noir guy on Twitter, Joshua Daniel. Joshua wants to know, what's your favorite class or race to play in classic Dungeons & Dragons?
I like playing as rogues.
You're a rogue?
I like playing as asshole characters who other characters get mad at. I've seen you play as wizards.
I like being a mage.
You like kind of being in the back and sort of hurling things.
I like to just hurl magic at things.
Right, yeah.
Chris, who's your class?
I usually either play fighters or rogues because I like simplicity.
Yeah.
I'm not here to fuck with the spell book. I am here to jump out of jump into a room and stab someone and get extra damage because of it.
Oh, that does sound really fun.
It's the ultimate surprise party. It's a surprise party, like an adventuring party.
There you go. Yeah. I'm such a textbook basic Ravenclaw. It's ridiculous. Ooh, with the spell book.
Yeah, I'm definitely I think I definitely fall into the wizard category too. Sometimes in like video games, what is that like class in between rogue and wizard? Where you're
the arcane trickster?
The arcane trickster? I like that class a lot.
Ooh.
That's fun.
But yeah, I like to be a thief who knows a little magic. That's always good. A good guess.
I am unsurprised that you like wizards, Matt, given the decor in your house, which occasionally includes several wizard statues.
I like wizard statues. That's super cool.
Well, that's the decor that I bring to your wedding specifically.
It's currently the decor in my house where there are 4 of them, and I keep forgetting to take them to yours.
You have one in the east, one in the west, one in the north, and one in the south.
Speaking of weddings and wizards, which is a great podcast that someone should start, Jeffrey's bachelor party was wizard themed.
This is very true.
And everyone dressed as shitty, like, eBay wizard costume.
We were shitty eBay wizards. We went to Universal Studios before Harry Potter had opened. And our joke of the night was just asking people, where's the Harry Potter land? We had to answer us.
It was
we
a good use of your bachelor party.
It was. It was. It was. It got, finally got that out of my system.
That's what you needed.
That was what I needed.
Before we could enter this union.
Sacred union.
Well, that does sound like a wonderful night, and it's where we're going to have to wrap up this interview segment. Jeffrey Golden, Amanda Meadows, before we let you go, please let all our listeners know where they can find you on the internet.
Great.
Yay. Well, you can find the Devastator at Devastator Press on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. You can find me personally on Twitter at Amandonium, A-M-A-N-D-I-O-U-M or whatever. like an element. It's purposefully hard to find. Jeffrey, where do
you... It's a bar you have to... It's the bar that you have to get over.
Yeah, you have to know that suffix by heart to get it right.
The folks can find me on Twitter at Jeffrey Golden, G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, The Weird Way, G-O-L-D-E-N. And you can find Wet Hot American Summer Fantasy Camp. It is in bookstores across the country.
Yeah,
it
go
is
to...
on Amazon. It is DevastatorPress.com. You can get it in a number of places. Makes a great holiday gift.
There's no place you can't get it, basically.
Right.
Unless you go to like a hardware store or something. What are you doing? But if you go to indiebound.com and type in Wet Hot, you can find, actually type in your zip code and find out which indie bookstores around you in your neighborhood have the book, of which there may be plenty. If you feel like supporting a local store this holiday season.
I do.
But yeah, Amazon's got it. And stack for now.
Yay.
Our guests have been Jeffrey Golden and Amanda Meadows. The book is Wet Hot American Summer Fantasy Camp, a playable RPG based on the movie Wet Hot American Summer, which is real. thank you both so much for joining us on the show once again.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yay, buds.
Thank you, buds.
Thanks once again to Amanda and Jeffrey for showing up. They are always a pleasure to have on the show and well worth supporting, especially if you are a fan of Wet Hot American Summer who wants a pretty weird piece of merchandise. But Matt, now it's our turn to answer some questions.
That's right. I'm going to pull a question from our Tumblr and we're going to answer it. And this question comes from MTG Manabarbs. On Tumblr. Okay. I don't know if that's what that name actually is, but there are no spaces, so I had to guess. Here's their question. They ask, how smart do you like Peter Parker? One of the smartest in the class or one of the smartest in the world? Or maybe something in the middle?
I think it's got to be something in the middle, right?
I do too. He's not Reed Richards. He's not Tony Stark.
Right.
He can hang with Reed Richards and Tony Stark, but he's not going to become a billionaire inventing stuff.
I guess current
Peter Parker in the comics does own a company where he invents stuff and makes lots and lots of money. I think that's the upper limit of how much of an actual genius Peter Parker should be.
Here's where I think Peter Parker's at. He's the smartest person on Earth, but it would be this Earth. On a world with Reed Richards, with Tony Stark, Tony Stark invented a fucking Iron Man suit in a cave, you know, like with Hank Pym, with Amadeus Cho, like with even Bruce Banner, like he's nothing. He's special, but he's not like that level. He's a fan of Reed Richards, but he's not gonna like Reed's gonna lose him. If he really starts getting into it, like he'll understand what's going on, but he can't do it, I think.
Yeah. Like he's not on that list that Amadeus Cho brings up sometimes where he's the eighth smartest person on the planet. Peter Parker is not in that top seven. He's probably not in the top 20 or the top 100. There are that many people smarter than him. But when he's in high school, he's not just the smartest guy in the school. He's the smartest guy in the school by a wide, wide margin.
Oh, yeah.
So he might be in the top 500 smartest people on Earth. But he's not going to make his whole career out of that. Like, he's got to be enough of a regular guy that he can just go out and take pictures and that be his job.
Yeah. I mean, I like him being – I like the idea that he could be, if not a Tony Stark, you know, if not a – if like he could be a really smart guy in the world. Like I'm trying to think of like who would be famous for being smart but not like a super genius, you know? If he wasn't busy being fucking Spider-Man. Like that's the thing about Peter Parker, right? Like he being smart is Tony Stark's job. Being smart is Bruce Banner's job. Reed Richards' job is to be a scientist. Peter Parker gets his powers as a student, as a science major is how he refers to himself in Amazing Fantasy 15, as though high school students have majors. But like, then he becomes Spider-Man, and that's kind of like his entire deal is that he doesn't have time, right? Like he's always late for shit. There's that idea that like, you know, Peter Parker's friends know he's a nice guy, but you can't rely on him. He's never going to show up on time. He's always going to leave early. Like it's if he only had time, he could be really smart, but he's got to be Spider-Man.
Well, and I think we need to make the distinction between different kinds of smart, right? Like Peter Parker is very smart extemporaneously, right? He's smart in the moment. He's clever. He can come up with quick solutions to problems, and he can come up with smart fixes to dilemmas that he has where he can like refine his web fluid and stuff, right? Or he can come up with little inventions based off of other things he's made that might have wide use and application to other people. But he's not doing stuff like Tony Stark and Reed Richards where he's thinking like big picture world changing technologies and inventions. That's not on Peter Parker's mind per se. And it shouldn't be. He's too busy in his own world to ever be able to think globally. He can barely get past local, you know, neighborhood.
Yeah. I think Peter's smart enough to invent something to get him out of a jam, but not to invent something that's going to make money. Like I love a thing I love about Peter Parker, and I think this sums it up, right? He invents web fluid. It's a super strong, incredibly elastic, adhesive substance that disappears after an hour. It's useless except for being Spider-Man.
Parker Industries exists now. I actually think it's over now. I think it ended up getting acquired by Alchemax or otherwise failing.
Alchemax, oh shit!
Yeah.
Matt, we got like 80 years, bro.
Yeah, that tied into a whole 2099 crossover thing. But I forget exactly why it fell. But the reason it came into existence was because Peter wasn't Peter when it started. He was Dr. Octopus.
Exactly.
Because Peter would never have that much forethought to start his own company like that.
I think I kind of like that, you know. Not just that he doesn't have forethought, but that he's under so much like he's constantly in triage mode, right? Like he's constantly in survival mode. He's under so much pressure and stress that like he cannot plan for the future because he's got to get through this thing that's happening right now.
Yeah,
and there's always something happening right now.
Yeah. All right, I hope that answers the question. Thanks for sending it. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do that by going to our Tumblr, warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also send listener questions to our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can send Every Story Ever lists to that email address. You can send panel president lists there. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Or if you just want to drop us a line about something else. Check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That's where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Also, check us out on iTunes, now Apple Podcasts. If you like the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, please. The more reviews we get, the more we are featured there. You can also rate us on, you know, whatever podcast app you choose, you decide to use, and that will help us out there. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you where you can find us online. For me, it is extremely easy. All you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net and you will find links to all of my stuff. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can head over to the-isb.com and they'll find links there to the columns that I write online, as well as the comics that you can buy in your local comic book shop or online at Comixology or Amazon. If you're in North Carolina, if you're near Greensboro, Super Famicon is this coming weekend. I will be there hanging out with the Retronauts crew, being on a few panels, doing some like interviewing and talking about stuff, and hopefully having a pretty good time. Going to try to have some Sword Quest stuff there for that crowd. And hopefully some Deadpools as well. So if you're in the area and you like retro games, come see me at Super Famicon. I found out that it's put on by the people who run Geeksboro, which is a really, really great comic shop and geek space, like in the same shopping center as the great Acme Comics store, that they have like improv and movie nights and like really, really fun stuff. So I am really happy to be doing that. So come see me. Say hi.
Before we end the show, we are going to highlight a good cause that people could consider donating to. We got this suggestion for a charity from Garrett M. Brenda, who let us know that they work for an organization called the Broome County Promise Zone, based in the southern tier of New York. It's a countywide organization that works with local school districts to provide supplemental support programming to students and their families. While the program at each school looks a little different, they all try to help students succeed and reach their potential by engaging the whole family. The programs include after-school programs, parent outreach programs, and support groups for grandparents raising their grandchildren. He doesn't work there anymore, but it's a wonderful organization, and it does a lot of good. You could donate by going to bcpromisezone.org. That's if you want to help the one that's in Broome County. You likely have an organization local to you that is doing similar stuff for local school districts. So go check around and find that organization that's local to you if you would prefer to donate to somebody local. Because school programs are increasingly needed as schools have less and less funding to work with. These kind of programs can help kids, you know, get more out of their day and learn more and be more socially active and so on and so forth. So thanks, Garrett, for sending that in, and go to BC Promise Zone if you want to help that out.
And hey, don't forget to get your health insurance set up if you need to do that. I did this week, so that was nice. We'll be back next time, but this has been War Rocket Ajax number 378. Matt, did we do okay?
Chris, we did. We really did. It was HQC, and I'm a little sick, so you know I got a sniffle, and that's all that is. But it was HQC. It was definitely HQC.
You're all right, Wilson. You're all right.
Bye, everybody. We love you.
Yeah. Flash. From this day on, at every breed of Mongol, live together.
Sorry, the latest video on Insane Clown Posse Vivo is called When I'm Clown.